You're listening to the Fanboy Garage Podcast.
And welcome to the Fanboy Garage. I'm Chris Losanti, joined by my co-host Aaron Varola.
Yo, yo, yo. What's up, folks? Welcome to episode 159 of the Fanboy Garage. It is another episode, another week. We hope you guys are all well. Things are crazy out there, but we are good. We are days away from New Year's, right? So bringing on 2022, hoping it will be a good one for all of you. But you didn't hear, you're not coming here to listen to well wishes and hope you have a good no you come to listen to crazy stuff related to entertainment and pop culture. Spider-Man hits a billion, gotta cheers that. Hawkeye has a finale, Matrix is back, the Batman drops a trailer, and maybe a couple of other little things sprinkled about. But let's start with the box office.
Sure. The thing we knew, that Batman trailer. Talk about things you didn't expect.
Yeah, holy cow.
But so obviously the big story at the box office once again was Spider-Man No Way Home, although there were other newsworthy items, I guess, with a bunch of openings this weekend. But Spider-Man No Way Home, actually, because we're recording this on Monday instead of our usual Sunday, so we actually have the final numbers today, which is cool because, once again, the estimates shortchanged the movie, the Sunday estimate. So Spider-Man No Way Home, 84.5 million final number for its second weekend, so which is 3 million more than, a little over 3 million more than what the estimates on Sunday had. It's, you know, it's a little lower than some of the projections. You know, they were thinking maybe closer to 90, 95 million for the second weekend, but it looks like Christmas Eve falling on Friday kind of hurt a little bit because Christmas Eve is not a day that
people go to the theaters.
Yeah, I mean, it still did like a $19 million Friday on Christmas Eve. But if Christmas Eve had not been on the Friday, you probably were looking at that number being around 90, 95 million. But either way, that's not the story here because the five-day number was like 140, like one or $142 million from Wednesday to Sunday. And the key is it's already over $1 billion. It's $1.05 billion as of now, which, you know, so it's already on its way. So, I think the fastest movie, or the first movie to reach $1 billion in its first
since
10 days of release.
Awakens.
Well, but the first movie to do it without China.
Wow.
In a 10-day period.
Bingo, bingo.
Yeah. So, which is just incredible. It's 500.
Is it amazing?
It is amazing. It's spectacular and all that. $587 million is the overseas total right now, and $470 million is the domestic total, which makes it the number three movie all time as far as 10 days domestic. Which is nothing to sneeze at, right? Behind only Avengers Endgame and The Force Awakens. It's actually running about $17 million ahead of Infinity War at the same point.
Wow.
So, you know, just to give you a general idea of like where this thing is falling, which is pretty incredible. You know, so yeah, I mean, it just, and now they say for like today, tomorrow, Wednesday, Thursday, they expect like $20 million days on average. So they think like, you know, you're talking about another 80 million, put you at 550 million going into the weekend. Like this thing will be obviously well over 600 million domestic by the end of next weekend, right?
Wow.
We could assume. And we'll just see what the final number winds up being, right? I mean, it's already probably a day or so away from passing like Captain Marvel, Civil War, like
they're all time hauls.
Yeah, like a whole bunch. Right.
Yeah.
They're total worldwide box office hauls, which is just nuts. So we'll see what it finishes at. You know, are we talking about 1.5 billion? Are we talking about 1.3 billion? You know, so we'll still have to see with that.
Massive.
Yeah.
Either way, it is massive. Still during a pandemic.
Yes, it is.
The first film to hit a billion since the pandemic started.
Yes.
So definitely a huge deal for this film.
And hit a billion. I mean, it's after its second weekend.
I know.
I mean, it's not like it's been in theaters for 2 months. Yeah.
Tom Holland is sitting pretty, man. In all of his films that he's been in as Spider-Man, he's hit $1 billion.
Yeah, and it will already have passed, you know, after like today or tomorrow. Rise of Skywalker, you know, Captain Marvel, Far From Home, Civil War, like those movies that are all in like the 1.1 and change, yeah. You know, $1 billion. You know, that's amazing.
Yeah, no, actually, scratch that. He didn't make $1 billion in Homecoming.
No, it was $880 or something like that.
Shy.
Yeah, Far From Home. This is Sony's biggest, I think they said biggest, I think I read somewhere that it was Sony's biggest movie of all time or something like that.
Yeah, it's their fastest blockbuster.
Yeah.
Period. I mean, hey, they better be throwing boatloads of money at Tom Holland to make more of these films. And boatloads to Marvel.
Well, yeah.
I mean, hey, Marvel. So, I mean, who holds the cards here? Is it Sony? Is it Marvel? Because it's Marvel's writing power.
Well, it's obviously Tom Holland, first and foremost. Clearly, probably holds a lot of the cards.
Yes.
I mean, it's tough because prior to this movie, I probably would have said that, you know, between Marvel and Sony, Marvel definitely holds the cards because Marvel has the MCU, right? Which is incredibly valuable, right? More valuable than, and Sony has Spider-Man,
right?
So, and you could
Spider-Man,
right? You could certainly get more mileage out of the MCU than you're going to with just the Spider-Man properties. But after this, I don't know because, you know, especially when you look at like what Eternals did, right? Yeah. And you look at, I mean, not that Shang-Chi underperformed, but I mean, honestly, Venom, which is part of Sony's Spider-Verse, outdrew Shang-Chi and Eternals worldwide. Venom hit over 500 million this weekend, the worldwide box office, without China, China did 270 million for the first Venom movie, you know? So, I mean, I think that when you look at it, I mean, you look at the size of this movie, like, I don't know how many movies like this, at least as of now, Marvel has, you know, to this size, right? I mean, this is like Avengers-level stuff from a Spider-Man movie. So Marvel's going to need, you know, but then again, they do have, you know, they still have, like we mentioned last week, they still have X-Men, they still have Fantastic Four.
Fantastic Four, yeah.
Yeah, they're still, they still have a lot going for them. But, I certainly think that it's clear now that Spider-Man, you know, is currently the A-list property.
Yeah, Tom Holland. It's funny, I hear so many people, they're actually talking to me, see so many people on Twitter talking about Andrew Garfield. Oh, give us an amazing Spider-Man 3. He was like the heart and soul of No Way Home, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, what? Did y'all see Amazing Spider-Man 2?
Right.
Just because he has like a 3-minute...
Moment.
I'm like, what? Doesn't mean that we're going to have a great film.
The thing with Garfield... you know, it's revisionist history.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same thing that happened with a, you know, we've seen this happen.
Just like...
Well, no, not so much Zack Snyder's. Well, not so much Zack Snyder's Justice League, but it's similar to what happened with Justice League, where like that movement that people forget started for opposite reasons, right? It started because people were annoyed that that word was leaking out that this wasn't Zack Snyder's film.
And they
were fighting back saying, no, this is Zack Snyder's film. Joss Whedon was just brought in to finish his vision, right? That was what that original movement started about. Mm. And then it became what it became. But so in this case, it's like, look, the Garfield movies, both of them were major steps down financially, right? Neither movie made close to $300 million domestically, right? They both made it over $700 million worldwide, which was a step down from what had come before it and what has come after it. And it was just the timing of it was bad. You know, but at the time, this is why I say it's revisionist history. Like, people forget, unless I lived in a different multiverse back then, I certainly remember a lot of people complaining, why do we have these movies? Why do they exist? Why didn't we get Spider-Man 4? Yeah. What's the point of this? What's the point of rebooting this franchise? Why do we have to see the origin again? Why do we have to see Uncle Ben die again? Like, we just saw this.
What's the deal with the parents?
It's only 5 years after Spider-Man 3. Like, why do I have to sit through this all over again?
Yeah, you're 100% variant, Chris. Like, I think the thing was, too, was the start. Those movies were at or around the time where, you know, the MCU was alive and kicking and, like, doing really, really well with
its
connective tissue. And, you know, there was a promise of, like, the Sinister Six and all of that in that universe. And then it was like, kaplunk.
Yeah.
And actually, it was funny because that was a story we talked about last week where, well, I don't even know we talked about this, but Pascal wanted to make an Amazing Spider-Man 3, went to...
Yes, we did.
Kevin Feige said, "Hey, can you help me with this?" And he said, "No."
Right.
The best way for me to help you with a Spider-Man film is for me to make it myself.
Yes. Yeah, and that's another thing that back then people were saying is, why don't they just put Spider-Man in the MCU? Why are they trying to create their own shared universe out of just the Spidey universe? Yeah. Like, it's not that important. It's not that big a deal. Like, I don't want to see a villain movie. And, you know, a lot of people, correctly so, thought that one of the main things that really bogged down Amazing Spider-Man 2 was the fact that it was really a setup for a Sinister Six movie,
right?
More than anything else. So look, but again, to be fair, Garfield's portrayal of the character was something that I think most people liked.
It was great. I always enjoyed it.
Yeah, they
and
may
I also
not
thought
have
the chemistry between him and Gwen was great.
Yeah,
or Emma Stone.
Right. They may not have loved the emo Peter Parker as much. Like, that was a little more, like, kind of polarizing. But, like, his Spider-Man was, like, that wisecracking Spider-Man that we knew, as opposed to Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man, which didn't really have a lot of that.
Yeah.
And not because that was Tobey Maguire's decision, obviously. That was just a creative decision. But, like, the Spider-Man itself, his portrayal of Spider-Man itself was a little bit more familiar, even though the Peter Parker was kind of not, you know, was a little darker,
a little more modern,
little more tortured. Tortured might be extreme, but you know what I mean. Like,
it's some angst.
Yeah, angsty and all that. So, yeah, so this whole idea, I think now it's just like people want to have a movement on Twitter to get behind. So it's like,
Amazing Spider-Man 3, give it to me now. No.
I mean, I even saw some people saying, oh, we should get Spider-Man 4.
I saw that too, and I was like, no, you did get Spider-Man 4. It was called Homecoming.
Yeah, well, not only that, but you got, like, to me, this No Way Home, you can say that's Spider-Man 4 and Amazing Spider-Man 3 in some ways. I mean, not completely, obviously, because they're not the stars, but it does tie up certain things and reference things in those movies.
It is certainly the most complete trilogy and storyline for a Spider-Man, without a doubt.
Yeah.
And it's good. I mean, hey, No Way Home, I was trying to convince Jess to go see it. She's like, I really want to go see West Side Story. I'm like, Spider-Man. She's like, but West Side Story. I'm like, Spider-Man. She said, but really, we should go see West Side Spider-Man. No. She said, but you already saw Spider-Man. I'm like, I want to see it again, and you should see it.
Well, the good news about going to see West Side Story is you certainly won't have a crowded theater.
That's true. So I can just wait for it to hit. Wait, is that a Warner Brothers film?
Is it Disney?
Is it a Warner Brothers film?
I'm not sure if it's Disney or Warner Brothers.
I don't know.
Or 20th Century Fox, maybe that's part of Disney, whatever they're calling 20th Century Fox.
Oh, 20th Century Studios.
Yeah, it's...
What is that?
It's 20th Century Studios. Yeah, so it's technically
Disney.
It'll
be on Disney Plus in like 2 weeks.
Yeah, probably.
I mean, I saw Encanto on Disney Plus.
Yeah, that already popped up.
That's a great movie.
I'm sure it is. I'm actually going to watch it.
That's a great movie,
It's, yeah, and it's done. I mean, we're still talking about the box office, but it's, you know, it's so far it's the highest grossing family film of the pandemic era. It's at 88 million. So obviously it's not where you know, it's not where it probably would have been in a normal time, but you know, the family audiences have been a little tougher to get into theaters, which is what's more amazing about number two this week was that Sing 2 handily came in number two behind The Matrix, ahead of The Matrix.
Ahead of The Matrix, yeah.
So that was kind of, that was a little interesting to see. I mean, 23.8 million for the 3 day,
yeah,
and 41 million for the 5 day. So they're thinking that if that has legs with the holidays now coming up and stuff, that that may wind up being the highest grossing family movie.
Yeah.
Of the pandemic.
Yeah, I mean, the first one's very, very, very popular.
Yes.
I've watched that movie more times than I can count. Thank you.
I'm sure.
Thank you, children.
Yeah.
Thank you, my children.
And what was not very, very popular were the third and fourth place films this week. Number three being The Matrix Resurrections, which did 12 million for the 3 day, 22.5 million for the 5 day.
We expected that with Day and Day on.
Well, so here's the interesting thing. Yeah, so obviously that's a big, big thing. But having said that, you know, I looked up the numbers for The Suicide Squad, which we all agreed was a bomb.
Mm.
It did like 55 million domestic and like 100 something million worldwide.
Overall?
Yeah.
Yeah.
With the Day and Date, obviously, release on HBO Max. This Matrix movie maybe gets to those numbers.
Mm.
So like, you know, I don't know what that means. I mean, I think that certainly having Spider-Man Home, No Way Home, coming out at the same time, which is going to cut into the potential audience, especially knowing you could watch it at home, is a variable that has to be considered.
And I mean, truth be told, if you're going to go to the theater, you're going to go see Spider-Man, you're going to see Matrix.
Right. And also the audience metrics were not good for the Matrix.
Yeah,
Got a B minus cinema score. It got a 63% audience score on Rotten Tomatoes.
Wow.
You know, so it's and we'll talk about the movie in a little bit, our feelings on it. But in fourth place, even worse, was The Kingsman, which, by the way, came out this weekend. Why? I have no idea.
I didn't even remember that. I think they had to just push it. That's Disney now, right? That's a Disney franchise because that's a 20th Century Studio film.
But the thing is, though, like,
they just were like, just put it out there.
But
we got to get it off the books before 2021 is over,
I guess. But you could have either thrown it on Disney Plus, or no, maybe not, because it's
FX.
It's, on FX something, or Hulu, or or just figured out. Like, I mean, you had to know
contracts, man. Maybe they couldn't.
For this weekend in particular, I mean,
I have no idea. They can't. I mean, otherwise, it's done.
I mean, they're going to write it off as a loss, so it doesn't matter. That's what I'm saying. Anyway.
Like, if it was a studio and they had to dump it before 2021 was over, you ain't going to dump it this weekend,
right?
Because then you're going to get no money. Ain't no one going to the movie theaters on New Year's Eve.
Yeah. Well, nobody was going to see this anyway. 6.4 million. For the 3 day, 10 million for the 5 day, and that will be on some streaming service, I'm sure, very soon. I did. The reviews were not good. I mean, you know, it's just you kind of sometimes you can milk an idea too much.
Yeah. Well, they're still working. I hear they're going to do another one.
Maybe not.
Yeah.
They might hope, but I mean, you know,
I don't maybe understand for the, like, maybe let's for go a back in the time thing.
Yeah, maybe I didn't get the
move for that, but whatever.
Sure.
The second Kingsman was like okay.
It was all right. It was definitely a step down.
Yeah, it was.
But it wasn't as bad. Like, I know people that hated that movie. I watched it and didn't think it was as terrible as some people thought. But it's clearly a step down. So that's pretty much the box office story. I mean, now we just kind of sit back and wait to see how much
Spider-Man goes.
Yeah, how much money Spider-Man actually winds up making and where it falls in the you know, in the record books and all of that fun stuff. Yeah. So
well, it's already in the books now, so
Yeah, I mean, we don't really have a lot of major releases coming out at this point. So, no. I mean, Morbius comes out January 20th, which may or may not be a major release.
Skip this movie.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. I'm not intrigued anymore.
Well, apparently you're not the only one, because I don't know if you saw this, but Fandango did a poll, and they polled 6,000 moviegoers. And asked them what was their top 10 most anticipated movies for next year, for 2022.
Yeah.
So what, did you see this?
No, I didn't.
So what do you think the number one movie was?
For 2022?
Yes. 6,000 moviegoers were polled.
The Batman?
That would not be correct.
Holy shit. Okay, hold on. Let me get another guess.
Yeah.
2020. Oh, Doctor Strange.
That is also not correct.
I'm at a loss. Not even going to go again.
Okay, so let's start from number 10.
Okay.
Mission Impossible 7.
Totally off my radar.
Number 9, Top Gun Maverick.
Okay.
Number 8, Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom.
All right.
Number 7, Avatar 2.
What? Okay.
Number 6, Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness.
Okay.
Number 5, Jurassic World Dominion.
No.
Number 4, Thor: Love and Thunder.
Oh, and I forgot about Flashpoint. The Flash.
Number 3, The Batman.
Mm.
Number 2, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse Part 1.
Oh shit. Yeah.
And number 1, want to take one more guess?
The Flash.
Black Panther, Wakanda Forever.
Holy shit, really?
Yes, and the top 5 most anticipated new performances of 2022 are 5, Zoe Kravitz, The Batman.
Yeah.
4, is it Issa Rae Across the Spider-Verse? 3, Christian Bale, Thor: Love and Thunder. Mm. 2, Dwayne Johnson, Black Adam.
Black Adam, yeah.
Although the movie, apparently not on the list. No, so that tells you something.
Shazam,
there.
Not on the list.
And 1, Robert Pattinson, The Batman.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that floored me. I mean, Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, like...
Fascinating.
That's a movie that's barely on my radar as of now.
But people are, like, tuned into it.
Apparently.
Shit.
And you would think that Doctor Strange... No, I don't know when they did this poll.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
you
yeah.
would think Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness would be on people's radars, especially after it's like how closely tied to the biggest movie like in years.
So they wouldn't have seen the trailer, because I'm thinking Into the Spider-Verse or Across the Spider-Verse, that trailer dropped like 2 weeks ago, three weeks ago.
Yeah.
So it had to be within that time period. Wow. I am shocked.
Yeah.
Holy.
So no Flash, no Black Adam.
Nope.
What else is missing from here? I mean, I'd have to really look back at the rest of the movies. But interesting that Spider-Man higher on. Now, of course, it's only 6,000 people, so it depends on who the
that's a substantial number of people.
Yeah, but it also, you know, what was the makeup of the population? Because like for Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse to be that high, look, it's probably one of my most anticipated movies of next year, but that seems high.
Number 2?
Yeah. Well, not high, just for like general population. It seems like it the number 2 behind, ahead of The Batman, ahead of, stuff like that. And considering
age group, maybe.
Right. Wakanda Forever. Like, that movie, I'm surprised people even realize it's coming out. Like in general audience.
Yeah, we follow this shit.
Yeah.
I totally forgot. That would not even have been on my top 10.
Right.
Totally.
Especially since it's coming out like towards the end of the year, right? I mean, not that some of these aren't.
I'm looking forward to that shit. I'm going to watch the Batman first.
Yeah.
Wow. So, that's crazy.
Yeah. Oh,
that's cool.
Yes, it is. I mean, you know, I'm interested to see if. With Doctor Strange, like we know that there's such a thing as the Avengers bump, right? Like with these movies, like the movies that follow a big Avengers movie. But like, you think there's going to be a No Way Home bump?
For
like, do you think that like Doctor Strange, because of how, you know, how much Doctor Strange was in No Way Home, and then the trailer at the end, and how people will try to connect the stories, right? Because we just saw a big multiverse thing in Spider-Man, and whether any of that has anything to do with Doctor Strange. And
I mean, they're tying it directly to it. There's, correct. I mean, there are lines in the trailer that are from No Way Home.
Yeah. So do you think Doctor Strange, which, I mean, the first movie did what, like 600?
Yeah, I think
80
so.
Million or something.
And that little teaser is exciting.
Right.
It doesn't give you much of anything, but it, I mean, the fact that they're doing it looks like what's his name? Strange Supreme. Whatever his name is.
Yeah.
The dark dude. Like that's pretty cool. I think it'll get a bump. To me, this is like a sleeper movie. Like, I think people were always like, so about Doctor Strange in general.
That's kind of what I mean. Yeah.
I think even without Spider-Man, he would have gotten the bump because of Avengers.
Right. Yeah.
But, it doesn't hurt.
Sure.
So.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah. So, speaking of the Batman, Warner Brothers decided to gift us a surprise trailer today out of nowhere.
That shit is dope.
And it's awesome.
The Bat and Cat. I'm done. I don't want to see anything else anymore.
Yeah, well, we're going to. I mean, they're going to give you, I'm sure, another trailer.
I know,
before,
but I'm so done. March. I'm so done already.
Yeah.
And the thing was, too, about this trailer was that there's been a lot of speculation of the role of the Riddler and, like, you know, him figuring out Batman's identity. They threw all that shit on the trailer.
Yes.
He knows who Batman is, and it's all tied to the Wayne. Like, I remember someone saying to the Waynes, I remember somebody saying, I forgot who it was and what book and what comic book it's tied to. You're a Batman person. You know this. Sorry. The whole thing about the Waynes potentially being caught up in some of the corruption.
Oh, yeah, like the Court of Owls stuff and stuff.
The
like
Court of
that.
Owls stuff, right, yeah, right, right.
Which is great.
And so, yeah, that's what this is.
Well, I would, I mean, listen, if they wind up introducing the Court of Owls at some point, which they very well may, that would make me very happy.
Isn't his suit familiar? What's the Court of Owls?
No, not really. The Court of Owls was the first New 52 storyline with Batman. Right. Scott Snyder did it. It's fantastic. It's one of my favorite Batman story arcs. That's, you know, that whole thing. It's great. No, but that suit was actually more, I've always said that Affleck's Batman suit in the Snyder movies was a kind of a cross between like the New 52
And the Frank Miller
suit, and you're right, and Frank Miller's. So it was a little more like reminiscent of that. This has like the Lee Bermejo kind of vibe with the high collar and stuff.
No. But what I'm talking about is the gauntlets, the Batman's gauntlets.
Oh, got it. Yeah,
are very Court of Owls.
Yeah, they're
look.
Yeah, I'm. That would be pretty amazing, and it would make sense because that's kind of a deep mystery, right, that's like embedded in the history of Gotham.
And
you could incorporate that into like with characters like Oswald Cobblepot and Riddler and stuff like that. And I have a feeling, you know, since we just saw it in the trailer, like you said, like they reveal a lot of that stuff. Like that's obviously not the big story of this movie, right? We would assume.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's gotta be more that we're not seeing, right? So what we're not seeing is probably much more interesting than what we are seeing.
Yeah, and some of the dialogue too between Selina and Batman, where she says something about like, you're gonna help me take down the Waynes.
Yeah,
it's like, oh boy. Then obviously, you know, the law turns against Batman.
Right.
Typical. But it looks great, and I'll tell you, the cinematography and the way that this film is shot. There's some angles off of here that I'm like, damn, it's going to be amazing to see in the theater.
Yeah, I needed this. See, now I know there might be people that are like, oh, maybe this is too many trailers or whatever. Like, for some reason, I needed this one because, like, as big a Batman fan as I am, like.
Is it Pattinson?
No, it's not Pattinson. I've already reconciled that years ago. It's like watching the trailer before No Way Home. It was my first time seeing it on the big screen. Not this one, the original, the last one, trailer that we saw. Like, I was not as excited for that trailer No, it's probably because I had watched it like 10 times.
Right.
But like, I feel like I needed something new. Like, I wanted to hear a little bit more of the music, which you do in this trailer. Yo, like, I was getting tired of this something in the way thing, you know, and a little bit of give me, I mean, the din, 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 din. Like, you do hear that in this trailer because that's clearly a theme here. But like, I like that we got a little bit more of that feel for this and a little bit more of a feel for like the rest of the movie itself. Like clearly you get a lot more with
it's dark
Selena. Yeah. And Bruce it's and
dark.
We got to see that awesome scene where he's got the gun and he's beating people up with it.
Dude, that where he put like smoke all over the place and he's just making his way through the smoke.
Yeah. Yeah. With the, and
dude, oh my God. Yeah. He's beating the shit out of people with gun. Dude, yeah. What?
Yeah.
What?
That
or when he like slides, it looks like he's sliding down the side of a building.
Yeah.
In like, all his glasses all over the place, and he just land. Bro, it looks so good. It looks. I showed it to Jess. She's like, "Wow, that looks great." But it looks dark as hell. I'm like, "Yeah, it does." Yeah. Sign me up for
and
this,
especially because you know Matt Reeves did that interview where he mentioned how, you know, he used Kurt Cobain as kind of an inspiration for Bruce Wayne.
For Bruce Wayne, yeah.
Which is interesting because it's a version of the character that in live action we haven't seen before, you know, where it's like that super just kind of dark and depressed, like where Bruce Wayne almost seems just as brooding as Batman. Which is
I think that's going to rub people the wrong way.
It may. It depends on how they go with it, you know, and how long that lasts and you know, how extreme it is. Because the idea of like Bruce Wayne as the loner, you know, Bruce Wayne as this like kind of being antisocial and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It actually, when you think about it, like it makes sense. It kind of makes more sense in a lot of ways, but then you lose that whole idea of like Bruce Wayne being the costume, like the mask, and Batman being the real person.
Right.
Because if there's no line there between the two, it's going to be interesting to see how they handle that. I'm not going to jump to conclusions and we'll see how they go with it. But yeah, I mean, it's,
or that was if all it's kinds just one of those awesome things where, you know, if he's an antisocial, he's like some elite dude, or like Bruce Wayne, that weird dude over there. There's no way that skinny, scrawny, grungy dude could be Batman.
Right. I mean, that's the whole thing, too, that I think is important. I mean, I think way back when I think we had Rick Shue on the show, we were talking about that was back when the Army Hammer as Batman stuff was coming up. And I had said that, you know, when you really think about it, like if Bruce Wayne is this really big guy,
yeah, if he's like a 6'4" dude,
yeah, like why would he need to be Batman if everybody's kind of intimidated by him as Bruce Wayne, right? The whole point was, and that's kind of one of the things I liked about Keaton's Batman,
unopposing.
What's that?
Unopposing.
Yeah, because he was a little off.
Yeah,
but he wasn't a guy that if you walked by him, you'd be like, I can kick this guy's ass. Like,
yeah, it wasn't until he goes, you want to get nuts?
Yeah.
Come on.
Then you're like, all right, you know what? I'm
shit, crazy, bro.
Yeah, I don't want any part of this. Yeah.
Did you just break that plate? You broke that mask?
Yeah.
Shit, dude, you crazy, Bruce Wayne?
Yeah. So, but, and you know, the good news is if you're going to want to see this movie again, you're only going to have to wait 46 days to see it, because they also announced that this movie will be hit, and all of their movies apparently will be hitting HBO Max next year on day 46 after their theatrical release. So after the 45 day window is up,
so easy,
it's going to HBO Max. So April 19th,
see, this is a good
this
way
movie
to get
will be on
subscriptions up.
Sure. Yeah,
that's cool.
So you still have time to, you know, for it to make a lot of money theatrically, right? Because it's going to make most of its money.
Is it March?
March 4th, yeah.
That's close.
It is, yeah. I mean, you're talking
about close.
You know, it's a couple of months away at this point.
I could just reach out and touch that.
Just over, you know, a couple of months.
I mean, dude, it's going to be January next week.
Yeah, yeah. A week from today is January 3rd.
I can't wait.
And then you got 2 months.
Yes. Batman, finally.
So
we got to get Rick back on here, talk a little bit about Batman shit.
Yeah, so that was a fun little droplet today.
That was nice.
Yeah.
I like Selena. Selena looks badass.
Yeah.
Badass. That whole movie, man, looks great. I'm on board.
I'm just really kind of interested to see the universe that they set up, because clearly they're setting one up, because obviously they're going to be spinning it off into HBO Max series.
Yeah, and the Penguin's supposed to show up. Colin Farrell's Penguin or Cobblepot's supposed to pop up in that.
Yeah. So, you know, they're clearly building an expansive universe world, which is cool, because that's kind of what I've always, like, dreamed about, right, from reading comics. Like, some of my favorite Batman stories are the ones where you have this big world, and, like, it's not just, like, it's not necessarily just, like, okay, origin story for this villain, origin story for this villain. It's, like, these villains exist. Some of them exist on the perimeter. Some of them exist. They're the heart of the story. But, like, they're there because Gotham is just this awful, corrupt, dark place. And you can just, almost like in a video game where, like, you can just, you roam around and you just, you turn this corner and now here's this thing, this villain, and turn this. So that's going to be kind of cool to live in that universe for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool.
So I guess the next thing was we got our Hawkeye finale.
Yeah.
Season finale. And they were, interesting to know that they did call it the season finale, when Warner Brothers was promoting, when Disney was promoting it and Marvel Studios was promoting it. So hopefully, we'll be getting a second season of this series. They certainly left room for that.
For sure.
Yeah. I know that there were people that were kind of disappointed with this. I liked it. I loved the entire season. We got to see the Kingpin, and it's like the Kingpin was similar, you know, to the Daredevil Kingpin, but different at the same time, because there was a little bit, he was more powerful. He was obviously, he had more comic book like tendencies and qualities about him, which is fine. I mean, that makes sense, right, for what the MCU is, you know.
Yeah, that Diamond Kane.
So we got to see that, and clearly that's going to lead into Echo, right, in that series. So.
She's great. That actress?
Yeah.
She's phenomenal. It's her first acting gig.
Yeah.
She's great.
Yeah.
it's funny. When I first watched it, I did not love the finale. I felt so disappointed after I watched it, and it was more about the Kingpin that like ticked me off, because I was like, dude, what, you're like a clown. I felt like he was a clown, because I was so used to, you know, the Kingpin from the Daredevil thing, and I have to remind myself sometimes that not a lot of people saw that. Actually, a lot of people were like, meh.
Right.
So they're not really familiar with him. You're right. He was similar, and then he was very different in a lot of ways. But I watched the episode like 3 times. And every time I watched it, I liked it a little more.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, yeah, no, I'm digging it. So like I kind of came around on the finale, but I walked away initially like, yeah, this was the weakest episode. And you're supposed to do it, but like the whole Jack thing, you know, Jack Turnt being like a hero / like villain type dude, like I'm like, it's fine. Like he's kind of like
he was more hero to me, I thought.
You know, you're supposed to suspect that he's some sort of villain, but like Kate's mom, damn, she dead. You know, she set him up.
Yeah,
and then try to guilt trip the shit out of her daughter when she was getting her arrested. Is this what heroes do? They arrest their mother on Christmas?
Yeah.
I'm like, bitch, you deserve to get arrested now for saying that.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I liked it a lot. I liked the partnership, the partnership between Kate and Clint overall. I thought it did a great job, and the payoff at the end was phenomenal. I love the use of the trick arrows and creating all that. I even liked the closing with Yelena and that whole fight scene and the, you know, sort of survivor's guilt that she was dealing with. I dug all of it.
I felt like, you know, the only thing was maybe if we could have gotten one more episode where we maybe could get a little bit more of the Jack thing.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe a little bit more of the Yelena thing, like with her maybe give her an episode to kind of struggle with this, because I thought maybe some
she
of that was a
it
little
too quickly.
Yeah, so maybe yeah. that would be one thing. But you know, it is what it is.
The whistle.
Yeah.
It does a better job at justifying some of the Black Widow stuff.
Right.
But yeah, I was fine. I mean, I thought it was fine.
And look, for the people that are, I mean, I don't know, you know, people don't have to take my advice, but I mean, we mentioned this a lot. Like, if you're going to keep Mephistoing these shows, like, I don't know what the point is. Like, just start watching the shows for what they are. Like, there were people that were upset because the Watch mystery didn't turn out to be like something that led to Steve Rogers.
It made a
coming
shit ton
back.
Of sense, though.
There were people that were upset because they thought Spider-Man was going to swing by in Rockefeller Center, you know, at the tree, because at the last scene of, you know, No Way Home, he's swinging by the tree. Mm. And it's like, really? Like, did you really maybe just watch the episode for the story that they've been telling you?
Yeah.
And, you know, if that Watch was really that important, like, they basically ignored it for, like, the episode before. Like, episode 5 didn't even mention it.
Right.
So if the Watch was going to be this huge mystery, like, I think they would have focused a lot more on it. But, like, again, like,
It's all about Clint's cover.
Yeah, and it tied in, and it made sense, and it's, again, it's like, just stop, do yourself a favor and just stop with this stuff. Like, just understand that these shows are telling specific stories, and they're not here for that. Like, they're not here for, like, in WandaVision, when, like, at the finale, everybody was expecting, like, Doctor Strange to show up or something like that, and then they got disappointed. It's like, no, these are obviously, this is not the forum where that's going to happen.
You know what, though? It's really telling, because I think people are trying to clue in on a blueprint. I'm like, oh, here's how the narrative is going to flow, and naturally it's going to lead to another hero popping in.
But that hasn't happened at all in any of these shows.
It hasn't happened at all. Right. And when they do it, it's surprising as shit. Because I'll tell you, when we were watching the first episode of Falcon and the Winter Soldier, and Rhodey pops up.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, shit. Oh, okay. Yeah, I forgot you're around too. Like, I like some of that stuff, you know. And even with Yelena, like, talking about her father, and them kind of bring, like, those are the things that you're like, okay, that's meaningful stuff. I don't need another hero to pop up, like,
right, especially for no reason. Like,
pop up at the end of Hawkeye totally detracts you from the story that's being told.
And what are you going to do about it? You're not going to do anything with it.
You don't remember me, but here I am. Right. Nobody remembers him.
And not only that, but, like, you're not going to make the first moment that you see or hear, like, Spider-Man and that out and stuff like that. You're not going to give that to Hawkeye for the end of a Hawkeye show that had nothing to do with Spider-Man.
Right.
You know, just overthinking. Like, we need to get out of this whole, like, overthinking thing and just realize that, like, a Hawkeye show is going to be about Hawkeye.
How'd you feel about that post-credits?
Hey, you know, that was what it was. I mean, would I have preferred something that maybe led us into Echo a little bit more or something else?
That's what
I
was hoping for.
Yeah.
But, you know, Kingpin ain't dead, because in the books he gets shot in the face and he just temporarily goes blind.
Yeah. Oh, obviously he's not going to be dead. I mean, again, you know,
Vincent D'Onofrio coming back as Kingpin. Come on.
And if you're going to kill him, you're not going to do it off screen without explanation, especially when he's clearly being set up to be the main villain in
the
show
got
that
shot
you've
in the
announced.
Chest with an arrow and then, like, just brushed it off.
Right. That too. Yeah.
You know, Jess was like, how did that happen? I'm like, well, I can't answer that, but I'll tell you what his suit's made of.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Even though he could dress like a pimp with a hat, I had no idea what the heck was going on there. But comic accurate, apparently.
Yeah. So, well, there was, right, because he said it was his idea, because he had a screensaver on his computer of that, with that outfit from the comics with the Kingpin.
Whose idea was it?
Vincent D'Onofrio.
Oh.
So he was like, hey, why don't we do, like...
And they're like, that's a great idea.
Yeah, well...
Dude, Vincent D'Onofrio looks gigantic.
He does look much bigger. Not quite what they said they thought he might be, but he's bigger, definitely.
He looks wider.
And I'm like,
how are they doing this?
And even taller, too,
yeah,
somehow.
It's the way that they frame him in the shots.
Which is cool, though.
Yeah, I mean, he was tossing Kate around like a rag doll.
Yeah, which he should be doing. You know, I mean, that's the kingpin. And plus, you know, here's the other thing, too. Like, for the Netflix shows, that was going to be, like, completely grounded stuff for the most part. So it's okay to have a villain that's just, like, a crime boss. But, like, in the MCU...
Like a brute.
Yeah, he's going to eventually be coming up against some serious stuff. So you got to have some other... thing, and that's why in the comics he does.
He's been experimenting with the super soldier serum.
Yeah, well, who knows, but I'm sure we'll find out.
He's a mutant.
About some of that stuff later on.
Yeah. He was, whatever, man. I mean, he snapped all of her arrows.
Yes.
That was fun. Hey, like I said, like in originally, I was like, what is happening here? I watched it again, I'm like, yeah, I like it. I watched them fight all day.
Yeah.
Yeah, he just tossing her around.
He's yeah.
Like, get out of my way. Go play with her toys.
So plenty of room to roam for a second season.
Yeah, for sure.
And for more story and all of that. So that was cool.
See, if people want to Mephisto themselves, then maybe you should expect Kate to pop up in Echo. Like, that makes sense.
Well, but that wouldn't even really be a Mephistoing. That would be like that. No, right.
It would be something else.
Yeah. Mephisto would be like, oh, I think Dr. Doom is going to show up in Echo. And, you know, that's going to
be... No, it's going to be Havoc. Scott Summers' brother.
Yeah. Yeah.
Alex. Yeah.
Played by the guy who played him in the movie, except it's not going to be... He's going to be Ralph Boner.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I used to love Havoc as a comic book character. No idea why. I thought he had a cool ass suit.
Well, it's a cool... Yeah, and he's got that super destructive thing going, you know, with that he can shoot
like destruction. Sonic waves. Everywhere. Yeah. Love that.
Sure.
Anyways, speaking of Sonic waves, right? The Matrix?
Yeah. So, all right.
Great segue, Aaron.
So I watched The Matrix Resurrection. So, you know, as I've mentioned before here on the show, I'm not a huge fan of The Matrix franchise. I you know, the first one is great. And, you know, the first one to me had like a lot of great new ideas, right? And it brought some new stuff to the table, like from an action perspective, right? And stuff like that. The sequels never really did anything for me. And so watching this movie, I have to say like this one didn't really do a lot for me either. It's okay. I didn't think it was a bad movie. Mm. There were things that I liked about it. I liked Neil Patrick Harris a lot, as the analyst. I thought that was really interesting. And I think his character was the thing that really kept me in the movie.
Got it.
I liked Jessica Henwick. So I thought she was good. I thought there were some really interesting ideas, like, especially in the beginning, like the whole kind of theme of like dealing with past trauma and like the therapy process of how to try to and how they kind of weaved that into this story and whatnot. I thought that was interesting. I just don't think that they kind of developed that. There was just like a thing for like early in the movie. And then it just kind of that was it. But I thought that was a really interesting idea that I think had potential to for them to dive deeper into. Some of the meta stuff was cool, was okay. But like even that, like I didn't feel like that was bringing a lot new to the table. Like to me, that meta stuff was very like Scream. Mm. Like, you know how like Scream 2 was like a movie about how like essentially the plot of Scream 2 is just all about like sequels, right? And like... why sequels are made and all of the tropes of sequels and stuff like that. So like, I thought a lot of the meta stuff here, again, especially early on, was really more about like the events that led to the making of this movie. Like where, like we know that like they didn't want to make this movie, you know, the Wachowskis, they just avoided it like the play, but the studio did. And the studio at one point actually hired Zach Penn to write a new Matrix that was going to be directed by somebody else. And then that never happened. And then Lana stepped in and decided to make this one and whatnot. But like, I feel like a lot of it was like driving home this point that like the studio and the fans were the reason why these characters got resurrected. And mm-hmm. you just wouldn't let these characters die. And like almost like, but not like, kind of like from the perspective of like, well, we still don't really didn't want to make this movie. But like right. we did, because you just wouldn't let these damn characters die. And like that was a little kind of weird to me. But then that kind of goes away. And then after that, like, I don't know, like I just felt there was a lot of kind of like a rehash of the first movie in some mm-hmm. ways. And the thing that actually disappointed me the most was the action and the fight choreography.
Yeah, that was the thing that stood out to me as like a major miss.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, I kind of love the movie.
Yeah, well, like, I know you like, because I saw you put a thing up, but you posted on Twitter.
Yeah, I was like, I kind of really enjoyed it. Like, I was like, at first, it kind of threw me for a bit. And we were texting, because I was like, this meta shit is weird.
Yeah.
Like, really weird. And it was like, I was trying to wrap my head around, like, what are you doing with this? And then, ultimately, I got it, and I started to understand, oh, shit, like, you know, the greatest truth is also the biggest lie, and you're trivializing the whole thing. The fact that Thomas Anderson develops a game called The Matrix and it's this wildly popular thing that everyone knows him for, everyone is like involved in, and it's based in reality. It's like everyone's truth that they're just like, that's so bonkers, that's not even real. You know, so like less people are gonna leave the Matrix because they're not gonna believe that it's actually a thing. Like that to me was wild. I thought the story, like the connection, the love story between Neo and Trinity was always like the strongest part of the Matrix, right. And that's still very much a thing. So like I enjoyed it, I really did. But to your point, the fight choreography, I was like, damn,
yeah.
And then I was like, dude, Keanu, my man, I've seen you move faster in John Wick movies. Like, dude, you can move a little faster.
Let me tell you something. There is a moment in the movie where he does a straight blast. Because there's a lot of like traditional kung fu in it, which I thought was weird because, like, you know, the first Matrix had like really cool, like, at least for this country, like revolutionary fight mm-hmm. choreography and stuff. And it was kind of ahead of its time here. But and it borrowed a lot from things that were going on in like martial arts cinema, like around the world. But now we've had all these years, decades, right?
Exposed to this shit.
Of like new, the like fight choreography has evolved tremendously. Yeah. And including in the John Wick movies that Keanu Reeves stars in.
Yeah.
And it's like, I would have thought that we would have seen some type of an evolution of that. And it's like they went backwards, and like, so he does a straight blast at one point.
Which is, for everyone that doesn't know what that is, please describe.
Yeah, it's funny, I'm doing it now, which helps nobody, considering this is an audio show. But
you guys can see it.
So a straight blast is like a kung fu, and even in Jeet Kune Do, which was Bruce Lee's system, it's something that's used. So the best way to describe it is like if you're two fists and arms, like you're kind of rolling your punches, like hand over hand, moving mm-hmm. forward, kind mm-hmm. of blasting towards the person's chest and like mm-hmm. chin. He's doing that, and it's in slow motion, but not bullet time slow motion. Like he's just lazily just doing it.
Yeah.
Like somebody that would be like doing a demonstration. You know, like it's funny. It's like when I was doing martial arts and my instructor was showing, like, we were doing like trappings and in fights, things like that, which is Wing Chun based, but it's JKD and stuff like that too. But like when he was done doing like his sequence, he would just like throw a quick lazy like straight blast just for momentum, like just to finish the sequence. And like that's what it reminded me of. And I was like, wow, this is not good. And that really surprised me. I felt like Keanu was kind of sleepwalking through a lot of this movie.
Yeah.
You know, Carrie Ann Moss, who's great, like, I don't necessarily want to say she was sleepwalking through. They didn't really give her much to do, to be honest with you. But yeah, that was the thing that really, like, I was expecting something like kind of some revolutionary thing. Like,
I agree. I so agree with you. And the way that some of that stuff was shot did not help it either.
No.
Like, it was very shaky cam, and, like, even in some of the action sequences, they, like, zoom in on certain things, and I didn't know what the hell I was looking at.
Yeah.
Until it was over. So, like, and, you know, I agree with you. There needed to be an evolution in these, in the fight sequences, because everybody else sort of evolved in this, right? And it just, I was sitting there, I'm going, like, yo, Black Panther, when Black Panther fights, like, that's a style, and there's a lot of, like, there's a ferociousness in that. Steve Rogers fights, there's ferociousness in that. When Spider-Man was beating the shit out of the Green Goblin, like, you feel that shit.
Yeah.
I didn't feel anything in
this. Yeah.
It felt, that whole, like, and the thing is, like, there was, you know, there's one major fight sequence.
Right.
Where the Merovingian comes out, and that was so bad.
Yes.
I was like, everyone's kind of like, show me your places now. And like, Keanu does this thing that I've said this so many times, Corridor Crew, and they have like their stuntmen react, where like when people are doing sword choreography and before they go attack, like they're waiting for their turn. So they'll do like this like over the head thing with the sword to kind of wait, or they'll twirl the sword before they go to attack.
Yeah.
To buy time. And Keanu, and this might be the same moment, but he does that motion like to buy time, like, oh shit, my place isn't here, so let me just move my arms over here, and like, you know what I mean, while I step forward. Dude, I was like,
which is funny because in like when you do like long blade or like stick fighting, things like that, which is what a lot of that stuff comes from, mm-hmm. usually you do that like after.
Yeah.
Like as a kind of a momentum thing to maybe shift positions, or like in the course of it. It's interesting to start out that way. Because like you said, it just looks like, okay, I'm just killing time, trying to get my timing down.
Getting into my place now.
Yeah.
Shaking, like moving my arms a little bit, spazzing out. Yeah, that was a thing. It's funny, Vanessa texted me. She's like, hey, you know, we're just exchanging like holiday well givings or whatever. And she's like, here's my Christmas gift to you. Don't watch Matrix Resurrections. And I was like, I kind of love the movie. And she's like, wow. And I would love to get her perspective as well on the fight choreography stuff. But yeah, I was like, oh, you know, was it the fight? And she's like, that was to say the least. Like, she just actually did not like it at all.
Yeah.
But, I mean, hey, man, to me, it was better than Revolutions.
That movie, so sure.
It's funny. Reloaded, to me, has some of the most amazing fight sequences in the film, in the trilogy. And that's I really like Reloaded. Like, I really, really like Reloaded. Not as much as the first Matrix. So this is kind of like, this movie is obviously better than Revolution, so it's like third place in my mind. Like that whole chateau scene in Reloaded, to me, is like amazing stuff.
Yeah, Reloaded is definitely better than Revolutions.
Yeah,
but it was definitely a step, to me anyway.
It was definitely a step down. It's one of those things where it was filmed like many years after the first film.
Yeah,
it had huge expectations to fill because the cult following just got bigger and bigger after the first movie, and then they were like, oh, we've got this awesome thing about technology, we can make a man fly without actually making him fly,
right?
And it just looks really weird.
Yeah. And it also got, you know, obviously they didn't make the first movie expecting it to be a franchise.
No.
So, you know, it's like you get into that habit now, or that problem of having to like create a universe that you were never intending to create. So to me, The Matrix worked perfectly as a simple, small story, standalone story that had, again, interesting ideas, right, about freeing your mind, right, of, you know, stuff like that. Similar, actually, to the themes that John Carpenter was addressing in They Live, right? This whole idea of, like, living in this fantasy world that's being where you're being manipulated, you know, into thinking that you're living in this, like, the world you're living in is not really what you think it is, type of deal,
right?
Which is all interesting. And then, of course, it brought the fights to, but then, like, then they had to expand. So then they started introducing all these other characters and all this other stuff. And then it got like
Zion. It got real Christ-like.
Yeah, it got bogged down. Right. And then they went all philosophical and stuff like that and religious.
Like, you know, it's funny because there is still a lot of that in this film.
Yes, sure.
Less on the like religious type stuff, more of like societal.
Yeah.
You know, bigger society thing from like, you know, continued use of technology and like destabilization of like truth and all of that stuff. Like, there's a lot of stuff to chew on there, a lot of nuance. It also
surprised me a little bit too that I almost feel like you kind of really did need to see the first three movies to kind of get, I mean, get, like I thought like, I mean, it's not so connected, but like usually when you do something like this, right, you revive a franchise, usually you do it like in a way where it's like this is kind of continuing, like, you know what I mean? Like, yes, I mean, there, like it helps to have known what Neo's fate was. Connected. Yeah, at the end of Revolutions, in order to understand why they need to find him and the significance of him still being alive, or, you know, in theory, like stuff like, and the characters and stuff like that. Like, I was almost thinking that they might go in a direction where it's like they used some of the themes but kind of created a new story where, like, it could be a jumping on point. You know, for somebody,
other characters. For, like a...
Yeah, I mean, they did introduce some new characters, but like somebody who didn't necessarily watch all three movies, or maybe hadn't seen all three movies in a while, or maybe you've seen the first one, and you know, whatever. Like, I thought that maybe considering how many years it's been,
right,
and that it's, you know, so that's why too. Like the nostalgia elements of it were a little surprising for me too, because I really thought that this movie was made for, like, I guess it makes sense, made for fans of the franchise, but, like, it didn't leave a lot of room for, like, a potential new audience to jump on. And, you know, like, you're flipping around. Oh, let me watch this. This looks interesting. I know Keanu Reeves. He's that John Wick guy. Mm-hmm. You know, and throw it on, and you'd be like, what is happening? I don't understand any of this.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, The Matrix could be a little tough to understand to begin with, but if you don't even understand, like, some of the references and the why things are important or not important, like that, that could be tough. That surprised me a little bit too. Like it's very much a direct sequel, or as direct a sequel as it could be considering the time lapse, but then it is like a restart.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it essentially is the Force Awakens for the Matrix franchise, more or less.
Yeah. But in a way it's, like, to me, it's like, yes, if The Force Awakens starred Luke and Leia, and you had, like, Alden Ehrenreich playing Han Solo, and then the new characters were kind of playing second fiddle and weren't, like, as integral, but the main story was still about Luke and Leia, then it probably would have been,
like,
The Force
Awakens.
Yeah,
it needed to be Bugs's story.
Right.
Not Neo's.
And you could have used Neo and Trinity and all them to kind of transition.
I mean, it kind of is the same thing. I mean, it started that way because she's looking for Neo, like, you know, people are looking for Luke Skywalker.
Oh, yeah. No, there's definitely parallels to The Force Awakens. I mean, when you consider the fact that, like, it's a new chapter in a story, right? And it's taking a similar arc, right? A similar plot to the original trilogy and the original movie in particular. And just
except Luke Skywalker actually picks up the the lightsaber versus throwing it over his shoulder.
Right.
Neo.
You're giving it a new coat of paint, and you're coming up with a reason for why this thing is still even a thing, because we saw it end. Right. And it's like, well, now why is there still, like, why is this still happening? Like, why is there still a Matrix? So, like, they did come up with a reason. But, yeah, I mean, there are certainly some parallels to that from what they were trying to accomplish with it narratively. Right. The only problem is, like, you know, in the end, it's Neo and Trinity are still like your stars.
Yeah. It's like, no, I was like, oh, okay. And then and now we're going to get like a new Matrix franchise with these two flying around, or do they just end it?
Right.
Please end it.
Well, based on might end it. Yeah, it might be a good place to end it. And
just flying around happily ever after.
And then if it does end, it's almost like if this is the end, it's like, well, what was the point? I guess tying into the meta themes early on, it's like, really, was there really a point to this after all these years of people wanting it? But, you know, maybe what people wanted wasn't necessarily this. Maybe what they wanted was something new, like something.
Yeah, something different.
Yeah. And I think there probably was a way to do that. And, you know, based on the audience response and stuff like that, maybe they were better off kind of doing a Force Awakens in the sense of like having, you could still have like your Neos and stuff like that, but maybe have them play a less prominent role and, you know, maybe figure out a way to kind of move them out of the story at some point and turn it over to this new. A new story, a new generation, new you know, enemies, new battles, whatever. And
I mean, they did some of that where they talked a little bit about the peace between the machines and, humans. Yeah. And I liked that stuff. I thought that was really cool. And, you know, revisiting some of the older characters like Sati and all that stuff. I thought that was really – those were nice touches, but agree. I mean, I think the hero and the focus, initially, I thought they were going to turn it on us. I thought it was going to be Trinity was going to be the one. And I mean, she ultimately is, but it's because they kind of feed off of each other now.
Right.
But I thought they were going to do it that way, where like Neo actually dies. And it's like, no, Neo isn't the one for this Matrix. It's Trinity.
Right.
And then I was going to be really annoyed. But.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
It's fine.
I mean, look, they made it. People wanted it. They made it.
It's making some money.
Doesn't seem like people really want it that much now.
No.
And like, it kind of.
That's cool.
It came and went, but you know what? It came and went at a time when it almost doesn't matter because it's not the talk right now.
No.
Like,
no.
You know, they released it at a time when, you know, everyone's talking about something else. And it'll just kind of go away.
Yep.
And that's it. You know, and see what happens from there. Oh, and speaking of, I mean, John Wick Chapter 4 got moved back an entire year almost.
Yeah.
Which sucks.
Yeah.
But
there was an announcement trailer.
Yes.
Very.
Yeah.
Very weird.
Because that's a thing now, apparently.
Announcement trailer. But sure.
A trailer to let you know.
You got to wait.
That you're not getting a trailer or a movie. Yeah. So, yeah, so that gets pushed. But, you know, next year's a busy year anyway. So, as we've seen, because based on the top 10 most anticipated movies, there's still other movies on that list that didn't even make the cut. And
nope.
You know.
No, one bit.
So, you know, if you're talking about at least one anticipated movie for every month, you know, on average, you know, if there's 12 and highly anticipated movies and probably more than that, in a year, then that's probably a good thing. So, yeah so we'll see what happens. But the next big movie coming out is, I keep saying big. I mean, Morbius comes out January 20th. Then the Batman, that's the next big, big movie that comes out March 4th. And then we're off to the races at that point.
Yes, sir.
Then we get our Doctor Strange, and we get to see more of the multiverse and all of that fun stuff.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Well, let's skedaddle.
Sure.
We can, start to get their livers prepared for New Year's.
There you go. yeah. So of course you can go to thefanboygarage.com, check out all of our stuff. And, of course, you can find us on the social medias at the Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, at the Fanboy Garage. And you can find me on Twitter at RealCLMighty.
And you can find me on Twitter at 88RonSpeaks. If you like Swords of the 80s, please go to our merch store. That seems to be a popular item. In case you, you know, forgot buying somebody a gift and they like Star Wars or Conan or Masters He-Man, of the Universe. Yeah. Buy it. Make us feel good. Alrighty, folks. Thank you so much for listening to episode 159. We hope you guys have a very merry, well, had a merry Christmas if you celebrated it, but have yourselves a great new year, and we'll see you guys in 2022.
You're listening to the Fanboy Garage Podcast.